This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
First degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
Like, they really, truly must have hated her to want to go to that extent. And, you know, it's easy to steal money, but I think this was about so much more than that. I think they were really just out to get revenge.
Hey guys, welcome to the First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen, two of my besties.
We are fucking best friends now. How fun is this,
we
Billy?
We forced Billy to become our best friend, but you like it. Tell the world you like
Tell them about the softer side and how they can find you. The softer side.
If anybody's listening to this,
help me.
Help me.
Send help.
Yeah, the thing is that's sad is like they can't see your eyes, like screaming, help me.
Yeah.
So you just have to give them some like subliminal messaging while we're recording.
All right. But I'm going to tell you guys what the holiday is.
Your love for us?
It's Happy Bat Appreciation Day.
I like that.
Yeah.
Are there any?
Well, you got Batman. Of course.
You got Batman.
Who's considered the world's greatest detective, and some people will argue that Sherlock Holmes is the world's greatest detective. They have met in the comics before. But I do like that. But also, it is...
National Cheeseball Day.
Which is you.
I'm a cheeseball?
Yeah,
or I like
you're totally a cheeseball.
No.
And you like cheese, too.
No,
you're a little bit of a cheeseball.
Your boy crush, man crush, Jerry, is a cheeseball. He's the biggest cheeseball.
He is a cheeseball.
Jerry, Billy loves you.
Jerry, where is he?
Jared is currently...
He's on tour. Like, where is he, though?
He is currently on a plane en route to Europe right now. They're doing a little European stint.
A little European stint. Okay, but it is also National Bookmobile Day. Do you guys remember the Bookmobile?
I do.
Yes.
Oh,
the Bookmobile was amazing.
For, like, book fairs?
Yeah, no. It was, but it came on, like, a motorhome.
It came on the street.
Yeah. Like, it was like the ice cream man.
Yes.
Yeah.
But with books... And it's also school...
You know they're not doing that anymore.
And it's also School Librarians Day.
No.
So it's a literature-heavy day. I'm into that. I like the cheese balls the best. I would love a Cheetos cheese puff.
Ooh.
Right now, doesn't that sound good? You wanted a crunchy snack.
Badly.
I know.
Really? We need some crunchy snacks.
We're holding off on snacks.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm keeping on the train of bad reviews. Today's bad review comes from Alexandra N.E. I'm just going to really call these people out.
Yeah, okay.
The subject is meh. It can be better.
You do a podcast and tell me how easy it is.
I actually don't know how hard it is to do a podcast.
Do you know how much research we have to? At least a week per episode. Just reading about it before we even
dive into making an outline.
And then a 2-hour interview on the phone.
Yeah.
And then scheduling us.
Yeah, but she's like, meh. You know, what does she
say? Honestly, Alexandra, pros. The stories are different and it has a great perspective with the guests that actually knew the victims or murderers. Yes. Cons. Most of these stories are taking too long to tell. I keep yelling in the car, get to the point already. I don't want to hear your long opinions. One woman takes too many breaks between words.
We know who that,
that
is.
That gives me anxiety.
That would be me, Alexis.
I think the group needs to work on storytelling a bit because the storylines are broken apart too much with opinions. I really want to keep listening to the podcast, so that's why I'm providing feedback. It has too much, so much potential, but I think I'll listen at a later date. Okay, I have to say,
I appreciate the feedback.
However, our podcast is like a mix of storytelling, mixed with opinions, mixed with banter, mixed with like a little bit of like...
There's also like Billy's experience and like... My experience.
And my non-experience.
No, but you experience life in the weirdness that it is.
But here's the thing. There are different types of podcasts. If you would like to listen to a podcast that is a scripted one, you can listen to Sword and Scale. You can listen to True Crime Garage. You can listen to Case File. There are a lot of other podcasts that if you want the story or like a Wikipedia entry, that's what those are. That's not our podcast.
Right.
That is not our podcast.
Billy didn't even know what this story was until 10 minutes ago.
I did not know what we were doing until 10 minutes ago. So yes, that is exactly right.
No, we rely on Billy for his opinion because he doesn't really know what we're doing, but he's an expert.
Yes.
And we're going to be like, hey, da-da-da, here's the crime. You're like,
there's also this other crime in 1967.
And I studied religious studies, and I have a reference that way, too. And Paul Holes. That's what Billy's going to do.
Is that what I sound like?
And you know I'm friends with Paul Holes.
And then I'll be like,
I'm friends with Paul Holes, by the way.
I solved a murder in Paul Holes and theology. And that would be his answer.
And I wrote a Rolling Stone article once.
And I wrote a Rolling Stone article, and I like theme parks.
And also, for those of you who say we make fun of Billy, I've never seen Billy happier than when he's with us.
Billy thrives in this environment.
And he knows what he's on board for.
Oh, I know what I'm
We don't hold a gun to his head to come back every week.
Oh,
men love getting trashed.
Oh my God.
We take him down a peg and he fucking needs it.
Yeah, it like turns him on. Right, Billy?
You're saying I'm a sub right now. Is that what's going on?
Kind of. You're into it. Anyways, should we get into our case, Lexus?
I think so. But I will say, as the woman in the bad review who breathes weird, I mean, if you listen, you've already heard me. Breathing is to stay alive.
Yes.
And if you're not on board, then you want me to die.
Then you are it.
And I can't have that, but I really appreciate your criticism.
Listen, Alexis can't die because the podcast would die with her.
That is true. Seriously, if Alexis dies...
Oh my God,
could you imagine a podcast
with me and Billy?
If Alexis is stopped,
we actually probably would have a good podcast.
We would.
About crime.
It wouldn't be about crime. We would just be making out the entire time. So.
Alexis, look at her. Shouldn't be stopped, but could be. But then you just have a make out Jack and Billy podcast. That's some real ASMR shit. So if that's what you guys are on board for,
somebody
come and kill Alexis.
Jared, please.
Honestly, would that not be the best ending to the First Degree podcast?
If Alexis died?
If you died and Billy and I talked about it.
You guys, the t-shirt Alexis Linklater must be stopped is already happening. But like, ding dong, Alexis Linklater is dead is a little morbid for me.
I kind of like it though.
Yeah.
But nobody do it, please.
No, nobody do that. And I will not have that. No, I do not want to put the last chapter of my book being that.
No.
Well, then you'd have to solve my murder. And
then I would have to solve your murder.
It could be a whole new book.
Yeah, it could be a whole new book.
Shit.
By the way, Chase Doctors With Me is out right now at audible.com or Amazon. So.
Yeah,
buy
and
that
when it comes out in print, maybe buy it then because me and Jack have a shout out in the book.
You do have a shout out in the book.
Yeah. Feeling good about it. But...
Let's get
in. Just get started.
And you've seen the shout out. You haven't seen the shout out.
No, you told me about it.
I told you about the shout out, but you haven't seen it.
What is that?
It's good.
Why don't you tell everybody?
It's so you
cheesy.
You tell them.
Cheese ball.
I'm not going to tell
puffy?
It.
Cheese puffy.
All right. Here's what I say. I say to Alexis Linklater for helping me soar, and for Jack Vanek for keeping me grounded.
Tight.
Jack fucking knocks him off that fucking high horse.
Honestly, I'm like, you're not cool. Nobody cares.
Exactly. So,
but like a lot of people care, but I like to pretend that nobody doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
No, we love you, Billy. We're happy for you. And everybody, you better buy that fucking book.
Yes. I don't know if it's good yet because I haven't read it, but I'm sure it's fine.
Dude can write though. So, all right. Let's for real get started. So today's case.
Wait, sorry, Alexandra, for all the fucking 10 minutes of banter in the beginning.
Yeah, sorry for the banter you said you didn't want, but this is who we are.
This is us. Let us
live. Right. And if not, there's like a million other podcasts. Like, we love... Please listen, but if you don't
I named three.
I just want you to be happy. If you're not into it, like...
I want you to be happy.
Exactly. I do. So, this case today takes us to Dallas-Fort Worth area. And it's the day after Thanksgiving, November 28th, 2014, which is known in the retail world as...
Dun,
Black
dun, dun.
Friday.
AKA the worst day of the year.
Or the best, depending if you're a thrifty shopper.
So you guys, today's first degree connection is Sarah. And she is going to tell us how her experience relating to our case today kind of unfolded from her perspective.
I started working at American Eagle in October of 2014 when I started going to graduate school and I was looking for a job to kind of have to make some extra money on the side. And I was actually going to graduate school for forensic genetics. I'm a forensic scientist. I met Ashley shortly into working there. She was one of the managers and so she was one of the people that trained me. All my managers were so nice. I remember Ashley being extremely kind and helpful and funny. She, you know, was serious when she had to be, because she was a manager, but she was definitely a fun person to be around. I remember her laugh. She was just definitely a funny person, and I really enjoyed learning from her and being able to work with her.
So the fire department is called on the morning of November 28th, 2014. They're summoned to a Fort Worth apartment complex at the 4700 block of King Ranch. And the person on the call said they believe the apartment above his was on fire because his carbon monoxide detector was going nuts. The water was leaking from the ceiling and dripping into his apartment. But when the firefighters arrive, they find a small fire. And they're expecting to find, you know, something. You know, they're firefighters. They're expecting to put out a fire. But what they find in the bedroom of that apartment is the body of 31-year-old Ashley Harris.
So I didn't hear anything until, I believe it was Sunday, and I got a phone call from Human Resources. And so I answered the phone. It was Sunday, I remember, because I was doing homework for school. And I got a phone call and they said, this is American Eagle Human Resources, and we just want to let you know that your manager, Ashley Harris, passed away this weekend. And they may have specified the day. And I said, what happened? You know, what could have possibly happened? I just saw her, you know, a couple days ago. And they just said that there was a fire in her apartment. That's all they told me. And so I don't know if it's because I was going to graduate school for forensics or what, but just something in my head said that there had to be some more to this story.
And Sarah's instincts were right, because what the fire department and firefighters discovered when they entered Ashley's apartment and found her, it was anything but a normal house fire casualty situation.
Her feet and hands had been bound with duct tape. Her body's face down on the floor. At the foot of the bed, she has obvious trauma to her face, her head, her neck, her throat. Her body is partially burned, along with several areas of the bedroom are burned, including her mattress. And there was also an empty bottle of rubbing alcohol that was found near her body. And the firefighter said that it appeared that the fire was started using accelerants, and they figured out, you know, that this was probably somebody that was trying to start a fire for a murder scene, and we need to bring in the homicide detectives.
Right. So Pilar Ramirez, who is a Fort Worth police crime scene investigator, was one of the first to arrive on the scene at around 9 a.m. Him and the other officers were trying to wrap their heads around what they were dealing with. There was this fire on top of this gruesome scene of murder. It was a whole lot to take in at once. And one of Ashley's neighbors told the police that he had heard a thump and screaming from the apartment a few hours earlier. And when the apartment was examined closely, they identified what appeared to be bloodstains on the floor, bed railing, and the door. They took swabs of all the stains and they packaged them to be sent to the crime lab for analysis. And I just want to make a little note. It's very interesting. Like, what you live in an apartment complex. Do you live in an apartment complex? Uh-huh. Like, you hear noises and
you don't think anything of them.
Not screams, but like yelling sometimes. And it's interesting when you put things into perspective when something actually happens.
And so I just really did a quick Google search. and it was immediately on the news. It was already, there were already news stories about the fire and how she had been found and that it was being investigated as a homicide. And I kind of thought that it was a bit absurd that they didn't tell me, wouldn't tell me, you know, that there was an investigation pending regarding how she died. And, you know, they said grief counseling was available and everything, but I just feel like that would have seemed a little more useful to me had they given me the full story over the phone. So I was a bit upset that they didn't tell me that. And so I found out really from Google. And then when I finally got to work, whenever I went to work next, you know, talking with my other managers and saying, they were saying what they had heard. It was definitely unsettling to hear that, you know, my safety at work could have been compromised, but I really found out all of it from the internet, from news articles. And I think that was even more unsettling to me a bit, that information wasn't really given to us in an official kind of way.
So the investigators observed what turned out to be Ashley's wallet on the bathroom counter. And strangely, it had two $5 bills inside, which immediately suggested to them that they're not dealing with a robbery here, because with such an overt, obvious display of money, you'd think just a criminal would just willy-nilly take it. So if robbery wasn't the motive here for this horrific crime, then what was it? And, you know, they were investigating and trying to figure out what that was. And meanwhile, the medical examiners were able to come and tentatively identify Ashley Harris by her tattoos. So they were able to then determine that she had suffered blunt force trauma to her face and head, and trauma related to strangulation on her neck and throat, which likely was the cause of her death. And her throat was also slit, which is terrible. So immediately the detectives wanted to speak with everyone in Ashley's life, because that's how they begin their investigations. They start close and they work their way outward. Mm-hmm. So obviously that included first her family, then her friends, neighbors, coworkers, so on and so forth. So it's at this point that they learn that Ashley was actually an assistant manager at the American Eagle Outfitters store at the Hulin Mall, which was less than 10 minutes from her apartment.
So they start analyzing the scene, the police, and they notice that there's no forced entry. So that's the first thing, right? No forced entry. Ashley's next door neighbor and friend named Alexis Torres, she tells the police that Ashley often left her apartment door unlocked when friends were going to tend to her golden retriever named Nala. And Ashley also planned to work late on Thanksgiving night because Black Friday sale, the Black Friday sale actually started on Thursday, because that's what we keep doing. We keep moving the Black Friday sale
up and up
and
up.
It starts on Wednesday and then it's going to happen in August or whatever. So Alexis had actually agreed to check on Ashley's dog for her. And she said, quote, "I would kind of camouflage that the door was unlocked by using my keys and pretending to unlock and lock her door." So she would kind of, when she was going into the door, she would like pretend that she was unlocking the door and then open it. And then when she would close it, she would pretend that she was locking it if anybody else would see it.
Right.
And she said she had planned to take breakfast to Ashley Friday morning after a long work night and was surprised when she didn't respond to her text message. Alexis decided to go to Ashley's apartment anyway, because they were good enough friends for that kind of thing. So they were just like, all right, I'm just going to check on
you. She didn't respond, but I'm still going to bring you breakfast, which I would do to you, Jack.
Right.
Thank you.
So this explained why there was no forced entry, because the door was open. Ashley's attackers were likely inside waiting for her when she got there, or they snuck in and they ambushed her when she got there.
Right.
So the police spoke to the neighbors who lived on either side and below Ashley. When they questioned further, the original neighbor who called 911 told the investigators that as the fire alarm in Ashley's apartment was going off, he looked outside his window and he saw a black two-door Infiniti G35, which, fun fact, is the same car I had in high school.
Really?
Yeah, but a silver one.
You had a Mercedes when we lived together, like in 2008.
I had a G20 and a G35 in high school.
I feel like that's like in a rap song.
Yeah. Kind of, no, mine weren't that cool. All right, they were older.
Go on.
So there was this black two-door Infiniti G35 leaving from the parking spot in front of Ashley's apartment with its lights off. He says it's a car that he'd never seen before, so obviously he took note of that being there. The police then moved on to speaking with Ashley's team at American Eagle. The cops wanted to speak with them, all of them, to dig up info on who may have wanted to hurt her, but they also had to notify them that Ashley's keys had been stolen. This is important because Ashley had not only the keys to the store, but also the keys to the store's safe on her keychain. And it was the only thing that was missing. So glaring piece of evidence.
Yes. Right. And the higher ups at American Eagle decided to change all the locks at the store. And of course, the attention is on the loss of their employee, but it seems like common sense. Like, if the only thing that's lost and stolen from this apartment during this homicide is the keys, what kind of weird malice shit are we dealing with here? So the police go to speak with the coworkers and with the higher ups and all of that, and are kind of dealing with this. And they learn from Ashley's coworkers that Ashley had worked the night before from about 5:30 p.m. November 27th to about 3:12 a.m. the 28th in preparation for the store's Black Friday sales.
We opened at 6 on Thanksgiving evening. And so I worked from 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving into the night. So I was working until, I was supposed to work until 3 a.m. And Ashley was working that night as well. I think everybody had to work. We needed kind of all hands on deck. And everyone was working, and Ashley was the manager once it, people started to kind of peter out into the middle of the night. And she actually let me leave early at 2 instead of 3. So I believe that when this all happened, she ended up leaving at 3 or 3:30.
She got home at 3:25 a.m., and met with a friend who left her apartment around 4:40 a.m. This means that Ashley had been murdered sometime between 4:40 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. when the carbon monoxide detectors had gone off in her downstairs neighbor's apartment and the water started coming through the ceiling. And that's, again, where the firefighters came after that call was made.
Right.
So word of what had happened to Ashley spread. 50 of her friends, more than 50 of her friends, actually, gathers outside of her apartment. They have a vigil. They have a balloon release. They all cry. They all talk about Ashley. She was described as a friendly, positive person, loved by many, never talked ill of anybody. Her friend Crystal Lee told the media that they all want to keep her memory alive. She said, "I think we should honor her and make sure the world knows what a great person she is. I just don't want what happened to her to go away." And they decorated the steps leading up to her apartment, and they wrote messages on it on balloons and left flowers.
I was definitely in a lot of shock at first. She was the nicest person. She, you know, was caring and funny, and I feel like I got a lot from my experiences being around her, even though it was for such a short amount of time, only about 2 months. And, you know, I feel like she had probably so much more to give to the world. And, you know, she was only ever trying to do the right thing, but it was definitely, it kind of was like a punch in the gut. It was a bit of a punch in the gut more than anything else.
So the police are combing through every facet of Ashley's life. They're starting close and working their way outwards, like Alexis was saying before. It didn't appear that Ashley had any enemies at all from the beginning. Everyone was talking about how wonderful she was and how great of a friend she was. And the police did learn something that caught their attention when they were interviewing more of her coworkers at American Eagle. So on August 24th, 3 months prior to her death, the American Eagle that she was working at was burglarized. Ashley was the one that reported that one of the store's assistant managers, as well as one of the store's employees, could have been suspects in this burglary. The assistant manager was named Carter
Cervantes.
Cervantes. She was 27 years old, and the other employee was her boyfriend, Clarence David Mallory, and he went by David, and that's how we're going to refer to him in the story.
Exactly. So apparently one night while Carter, we're going to call them Carter and David from now on.
Carter and
those
David.
Those are their full names. So one night while Carter was working and closing the store alone, she was seen on surveillance footage leaving, whether it's intentional or accidentally, leaving the back door of the store unlocked. And after the store closed, a male in a hoodie is seen entering the store and going directly to the safe and unlocking it. More than $18,000 was stolen that night. And this theft had occurred the night after a huge back-to-school sale that the store was having. And in that case, the police suspected David Mallory used a safe key that Carter had stolen from another assistant manager while at work. And after the robbery, David, who was an employee, he failed. He never went back to work. He missed the next three shifts and was fired.
Yeah.
Which is the most obvious thing. You know, of course you're
like,
involved.
I got that money. I'm not going back to work.
Exactly. Exactly. And so he never reported back to work. And of course, Ashley, who was another assistant manager there, reported to the higher ups that she suspected that Carter and Clarence, they suspected that Carter and David were responsible. And what's interesting is that Ashley really wanted to work for the store's loss prevention unit, like on a executive sort of higher up level. And that's what she was working towards. And this is obviously the division that tries to stop theft, particularly internal theft. So she spent a lot of time reviewing this security video footage. And she's essentially the one that made the conclusion that David and Carter were the ones behind the theft.
Ashley was killed. She had been killed in a terrible way. She was bound and gagged, and that they had set fire to her apartment. One of my managers said that she had a feeling that she knew who killed her and that it was probably those people that had previously stolen money from the store. The whisperings that I heard were basically that, you know, they had stolen money over the summer. I mean, I think it was like $18,000. And I mean, that's not chump change. That's definitely still a significant amount of money. And that they, I guess, were caught and were fired and they weren't happy about that. But I had heard that Clarence, David, whatever his name is, he, I think, had lied to get a job at a different American Eagle after he was fired because they were banned from being hired again. And I heard that he may have like switched his social security number or something to get hired at a different store after the fact. So I don't know the full details on that, but one of my managers said that she knew that he had done some shady stuff to try to get kind of back in.
So Carter's suspended and she's later fired. And after the internal investigation into the theft at the stores, so she admits to the store's manager that she had possibly left the back door unlocked. Quote, she responded that she did not see what the big deal was because the loss should be covered by insurance. Yeah. All right. So neither was charged nor arrested in the burglary, which is... You know, that's one of the things that you see in retail stores. Okay, you know, we just want to be rid of it, but we don't get the authorities involved in it. And when you don't get the authorities involved in it, something bad could happen. And this is what happens right here.
But I think it's also one of those things where she's right, where insurance did cover it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, but you don't steal stuff.
But,
just...
but they couldn't, I think in their heads, they're like, we can't prove it. It's a guy in a hoodie. It could have been an honest mistake of her leaving the door open. So they're like, whatever, we're going to fire her. It's 18 grand. We're pissed, but like it might not have been worth the headache of pursuing more.
Yeah, and by the way, 18 grand
is a lot of money
in the coffer in cash in 2014 when so many people are using credit cards is pretty impressive for an American Eagle store.
Absolutely.
I mean, I wear American Eagle jeans. I like them. They're
you
good.
Do?
They're comfortable. Yeah, they stretch.
Really?
They're like they got the 360 stretch. They're awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
I wish we had American Eagle sponsoring this episode
of
the podcast.
Exactly. We should have that, but they're not going to touch this in a million years. Okay. So as the police were learning about all this, they wondered if this work situation could possibly have anything to do with this brutal murder. And they weren't really sure because it seems like it would be a pretty extreme escalation.
Yeah.
To go from this theft to murder. But there was one detail about Carter that caught their attention. They learned that Carter drove what?
A two-door.
Two-door
black Infiniti G35.
Tight car.
And they could find pictures of it on her Instagram because, yes, of course, she posted her car.
Like, just don't.
Just don't kill anybody.
I mean, don't kill anybody. But like,
post pictures of your car on Instagram. Just don't fucking kill anybody.
No, yeah. The only time you're allowed to post pictures of your car if you drive a Maserati or above,
and like an Infiniti, it's like, okay,
it's fine. I mean, cool. I don't know.
You guys are really. Not Being getting dicks. The point here where it's don't kill anybody.
Yeah, don't kill anybody.
And then it's the idea of don't
post whatever you want, but don't kill anybody because the police will use your Instagram to find you.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, okay. So anyways, so the police were now curious enough about Carter and David to really look into them. They learned that David was only 21 years old and Carter was 27, being a cougar. They ran the plates on Carter's Infiniti to get an address for the pair who lived together, and they started to conduct surveillance on the couple's apartment. 2 days after Ashley's murder, the police watched their apartment and saw them come home at around 7:45 in the morning. Carter and David then got into the Black Infiniti and drove to Hullen Mall, where the American Eagle store where they used to work was located. David dropped Carter off at the mall's south entrance and then drove around the parking lot and parked away from the entrance. Carter then entered the mall. That's when officers approached David in the parking lot and questioned why he was at the mall so early, because they were there at around 8 a.m. when the stores generally open around 10. And there's no reason for them to be there that early.
Right. And they're following them. They're under surveillance, yeah, due to these odd circumstances. So they already sort of know. I mean, I think part of them wanted to not believe, like, they couldn't possibly have conducted a horrible murder over,
right,
robbing American Eagle. But like, maybe that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So when David responded to the officers, he told them that he was waiting for his girlfriend who worked at Aeropostale store inside that mall, which, of course, is not true. They asked David for his driver's license. He didn't have one on him. So the police kind of seized this opportunity as an excuse to take him in and arrest him for not having a driver's license, where normally, if you're a normal person who's not committing a crime, I've been let go for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they generally will if you don't seem like a degenerate, which is really nice. So when they brought him in, curiously, he was wearing a black ski mask pushed up on his head.
Jesus. Come on.
They suspected that David was involved. So the police obtained a search warrant, and in the car, they found ski masks, a 9mm handgun, a single walkie-talkie, and a visual guide to lockpicking in the vehicle.
This is literally out of a fucking movie.
A visual guide to lockpicking.
Right. So police searched the mall, but they couldn't find Carter. Later, though, they did find Carter at their shared apartment, David and Carter's shared apartment. And officers said they think that she walked home after going to the mall. She agreed to be taken to the homicide office for questioning. Meanwhile, though, the police also pulled the surveillance from the mall to see what Carter was doing while she was there. And in the footage, they could see that she was trying to enter the American Eagle store with a set of keys. Presumably these keys, you know, are Ashley's, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But this was early enough. It was 7:45. It was before any of the store employees would have arrived. And as we know, American Eagle changed their keys. So the keys did not, in fact, work. And the surveillance then showed her walking from the mall in the direction towards home. And in the footage, she's confused because David's gone. And he was supposed to be waiting outside,
yeah,
for her.
Yeah, so she's like looking around where he went.
Exactly. And she's like in her jammies. The whole thing's really weird. So another thing, though, is that she has worked at the store for a long time. This was right after a Black Friday sale. She would have known that there would have been a huge amount of cash in, yeah, the safe at this time.
Yeah, so on Black Friday and Thanksgiving, the crowds are insane. People just want to come in for the best deals and, you know, everybody wants to go shopping. And so we would have ended up with a lot of cash in the safe. And I'm sure that since they had worked there previously, they knew that there was going to be a pretty hefty amount of cash in the safe from all the sales that we were going to make those 2 days.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways. And with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences. And before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today.
In 1987, Anita Wiley disappeared without a trace. In 2020, DNA testing brought her truth to light. Truth Be Told presents She Has a Name, a new podcast about the disappearance of Anita, set against the backdrop of the drug epidemic in 1980s Detroit. Hosts Tanya Mosley and her nephew Antonio travel through Detroit to uncover the mysteries of what happened to Anita. She Has a Name tells a story of loss and redemption, mending broken family ties, and facing the trauma experienced by countless individuals who've lost loved ones to violence. Join Tanya and Antonio as they unravel the secrets of what happened to Anita Wiley. Listen to She Has a Name wherever you get your podcasts.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the real world makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the real real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
So luckily, American Eagle had changed their locks. So Carter hadn't been able to get in, but the police learned that there was somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000 in the store's safe. Again, that still boggles my mind in 2014 that many people were using cash.
I know, but they
that
were.
That is weird.
You know what? East Coast, I feel like this... Well, I guess it's not East Coast sex. People use cash, though. I love using cash.
I love cash.
Okay, Alexis uses too much cash.
I love cash.
Always using cash. I never carry cash.
I do. Honestly, I love cash, too, but that's weird.
Why?
But, okay.
You can't get your tax credit
I can't get
cash.
Points on it?
Well, you can't get points, and then you can't.
I just
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but she can't be traced, though.
It's just... But cash is just catchy. Faster. But I just love cash. It's easier.
I don't. Anyways...
All right, so there's $40,000 to $50,000 in cash in the store safe, and it's now becoming clear that Carter, she had worked for American Eagle for a bunch of years, and she would have been familiar with the amount of sales, like anybody would be. You know, obviously, the biggest sales would have been Black Friday. The whole reason why it's called Black Friday
100%.
Is because that you get into the black. You were in the red, and then the store was in the red, which means that they were showing a loss. Black Friday is they get into the black.
When that's you, where when that you talk about, term yeah, that, came that's, from?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
What do you think it was?
Did you know that?
I don't really care about it. No.
You thought it was like about the Black Parade?
No, we didn't think because we don't care.
I wish it was. No, I honestly have never thought about it before.
All right,
that's a weird thing.
I'm jealous of your knowledge, but also not because that's useless information.
I'm Googling it because that doesn't seem right.
It is. Look at it. Look it up.
Okay.
All right, so while the police questioned each of them, it seemed that Carter and David, their stories were not matching up. And remember that the police had been conducting surveillance on them for days. So they had all this footage of them. And it was all contradicting all the stories that they were telling them. So they were obviously lying.
Right.
Carter denied being at the mall that morning and denied trying to enter the store, even though when you look at the surveillance tapes...
They show her fumbling with keys. But, yeah. She's fumbling with keys trying to get into the store.
Jesus Christ.
So like, dude, no.
All right. Well, before I start my little thing, Billy was right. So
surprise.
So another thing that the investigators uncovered was that surveillance footage of Carter at a Home Depot buying two shovels, a rope, bungee cords, a pair of gloves, and a tarp. On November 21st, 2014, which was a week before Ashley was found and killed.
Yeah, not good.
Like, you got, I mean...
We see this. How many times have we done... This is like the fourth or fifth time that we've had this.
And then the things in the trunk.
Also, just
a
order...
A visual guide of how to lockpick a car. Like,
just order the shit on Amazon.
No, I mean, Amazon's just as bad.
No, that's
Alexis.
Just as bad, too.
Tracing.
Come on, Alexis.
But if you're doing you're so this, you might this. As well... Is all I'm saying. They're that bad at it. Like, have it delivered to your home then. I don't know.
By the way, Amazon is now a new sponsor of our... No. You borrow the stuff, I think, is what you do.
From who?
I don't know. You buy it...
You have somebody else buy it for you. I don't know why we're helping people commit crime.
Will you buy something for me?
No.
Billy,
I'm not buying anything
can I send you a to-do list?
But
no.
It just... It really... It goes back to how fucking dumb are you that you're going to, like... Okay. Anyways, so they buy all this bullshit on Amazon at Home Depot.
We wish it was Amazon.
So everything's obviously looking really bad for them. Everybody was floored that it seemed like they actually were plotting this murder, and the whole thing seemed to be motivated by money. And this seems super horrific, but it gets worse. So it turns out that both Carter and David previously worked at a different American Eagle at a store nearby in Abilene, Texas. This is actually the store they had met and they had started dating. So David ended up being fired from that store as well after missing three straight shifts without contacting store managers.
That's his MO.
We have talked about. Dumb fucking move. And after he was fired, he was transferred to the Hullen Mall store where Ashley had worked, and that's where everything had taken place. So Carter had secretly hired David. She switched his first name with his middle name and then also switched the two digits of his social security number so that he could be hired at the store without people realizing it was the dude who had been fired from the sister store weeks earlier.
Right. That's crazy. I want to just make that super clear. So Carter was the manager of the Abilene store. When she got transferred to the Hullen store, she wanted her boyfriend to come with her. So he had been fired because he didn't show up. So she's the one who manipulated all these numbers.
Right.
And dark shit. But anyways, so that's when they became a couple. But another side note is that it's...
Also, do you really need to work with your boyfriend? Like, dude. Well,
also, it's against our policy to do so. So I don't actually know why she switched from that Albaline store to the Holland store, but I think it had something to do with it.
Yeah.
And they were having a lot of tolerance for her bullshit and like decided to just transfer her instead of firing her.
Yeah.
And yeah, she fucked them over in that like...
Yeah, she really fucked them over.
Listen, yeah. I don't want to work with my boyfriend, but I'm going to hire him under a different name, even though he's been fired.
Dude.
And it was only weeks.
Unnecessary.
It was like weeks later that this large robbery occurred that Ashley noticed
right.
and turned them in for. So anyways, the investigation is continuing. The text messages are coming to light and coming to the surface, and the police are pulling all of them and seeing what the hell these people are saying to each other. So it turns out that the second plot involved these two planning to rob the Albaline store that they both formerly worked at. So their phone traffic showed that they were staking out the store less than 2 weeks before Ashley was slain. And while they were there, they exchanged a bunch of incriminating text messages, and they were able to prove this with, you know, GPS and all that shit, and proving where these text messages were sent and received. So in their text messages, on 10:45 p.m. on one day, David wrote to Carter, "There's no way this place doesn't have a back door." Carter responded, "I haven't seen the little blank manager come to the back yet." Blank means an expletive, you know? Yeah. And these are obviously pulled from the court documents, so I don't know. So maybe I just missed him. I found their back door. It comes out really close to the only place with cameras. And then shortly before, I guess, 6 p.m. the next day, Carter told David that she had found the back door, blah, blah, blah. They were basically plotting to figure out how to rob this store. And later, when she was in custody, Carter told the police that she believed David was having a sexual relationship with another assistant manager at this Albaline location, which prompted her to take pictures of the assistant manager's car. And there were texts proving that she planned to slash her tires, retaliate towards this person. And they were essentially likely plotting to do to this manager what they ended up doing to Ashley, which is
Jesus,
insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances are like one in a million that these kind of people find each other, but we hear about it all the time about killer couples. And I think it maybe there was some manipulation there. Maybe one of them convinced the other, but I feel like to go through with something this dark, you have to be kind of almost there already by yourself. You have to have that hatred and that willingness, and maybe that other person just kind of gives you the extra push you need. But I definitely think that they both, you know, probably would have done something like this on their own.
So on December 5th, they've had enough. They got enough to make an arrest. David's taken into custody at his at a private residence in Amarillo by the Marshal Service without incident. He's booked into Potter County Jail, transported to Fort Worth Police Homicide Unit to be interviewed by detectives. The police also suspect that Carter and David to be great flight risks because they didn't have any ties to Fort Worth, but to actually Amarillo and Lubbock. So the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles records show that at least one vehicle each in Mallory's and Cervantes's names.
Carter and David.
So Texas Department of Motor Vehicles records show that at least one vehicle in each of Carter and David's names are registered at addresses in Amarillo. On December 6th.
Carter and David.
Carter.
Is it Carter?
Carter and David are their names.
No, but Carter was
Cervantes.
Taken in.
Carter, yeah. Cervantes, David, okay. Mallory.
On December 6th, Carter is taken into custody by Tarrant County deputies and transported to the Fort Worth jail. So here's what police theorized what happened. They believe that Carter and David, they essentially stalked Ashley Harris. And they zeroed in on a time, a window of time, when they thought that she would be most vulnerable, which was around the time of the Black Friday rush. And then they either break into Ashley's apartment and they hid, or they waited for her to get home and then they ambushed her while she was sort of, you know, opening the door, or maybe they walked in when she was asleep. Then they kill her, they take her keys, and they're going to take those keys and take them to the American Eagle store and then rob the store with the safe. And as they're planning this murder slash robbery, they're also plotting to do something similar at the Abilene store.
So David and Carter are charged with capital murder, but for whatever reason, the prosecutors decided not to seek the death penalty against either of them. The prosecutor was appalled over the heinousness of the crime and was quoted saying, "There are no good murders, but at least there are some that you can understand. This was different. At a minimum, this took at least a month of planning. They stalked Ashley Harris like people stalk a deer."
I'm pretty sure that they broke in, whether they had to actually physically break in or not, because if the door was open, I'm not sure. But I read that there was her friend had gone over there, home with her, I guess, and that they went inside after the friend had left, because her friend had said to the police that she left around whatever time, and they went in after that. So I assume that, I think that might be maybe that's kind of what the stalking, like they, you stalk a deer quote from that detective is in reference to, that they really just, they waited in the parking lot until she was alone. They watched her apartment until her friend left so that they knew she was alone. And that's when they went in.
And unsurprisingly, as the trials approached, the two of them started pointing fingers at each other. When Carter got onto the stand to testify, she claimed that she was terrified of her co-defendant and live-in boyfriend, and claimed that she was raped when she did not do what he wanted.
I mean, that was truly the most pathetic thing I think I've ever seen in my life. It's the easiest defense is to blame the other person when there's more than one suspect and there's more than one person, you know, being tried for a crime. The easiest thing is to point fingers at the other one. And, you know, I think that this, you know, little girl crying in the courtroom, she thought that she would get pity. And there's no pity to be had when this is something that's just so gruesome.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, you see this kind of a lot. You either see these people turning on each other or you see them standing united. But this is particularly interesting. So she immediately starts to just point the finger at him, that he was the aggressor, that it was all his fault. And it was kind of the prosecutors really believe that she was the mastermind. So this is kind of the stance her defense took. So this is her version of events. So I'm not going to say it. Allegedly her version until I'm done. This is her version of events until we're done and we say otherwise. So Carter said that she cooked when she was walking through the events of those couple of days. She said that on Thanksgiving, she cooked a traditional Thanksgiving dinner and David that day got drunk. Then they watched movies, smoked weed, and then she got sick. It was still daylight at that time. And then she claimed to know nothing of the slaying. She was asleep the entire time in the apartment that she shared with David. And then she said, "I laid down and when I woke up, it was dark and David was there. And both hands on the clock were pointed at 5. I went to bed and went to sleep. Then I was woken up by David and he said I needed to get ready to go to Claiborne and he wanted me to pack. So then they went to Claiborne, which is a neighboring town. They rented a motel room, and this was November 28th. But later that day, David had her drive to the Hullen Mall while he toyed with a 9mm Glock handgun that he held in his lap. So he was in the car with her during this drive. She said that he then put the gun in her face and tried to make her steal money from the store. David threatened to hurt her parents and relatives if she did not do what she was told. So at this point, you know, when she didn't do what she was told, they returned to their apartment, where she claims David's friends raped her repeatedly. She claimed that the first time David pointed the gun at her, she flinched. He laughed. He asked if I thought he would shoot me. I said no. He said, "You don't know me, but I know you." And then he called out her grandmother's name and address, her brother's address, and the address of her parents. He forced her at gunpoint to recount the day's events, almost testing her, like, are the police, if the police question you, you know, what are you, what's your story? Like, just testing her. But she didn't really know what happened. He then said, "There are people who are meaner than me following you," and claimed just her boyfriend threatened her throughout this entire process.
So Carter said that they went back to the Hewland Mall, and David gave her what looked like the keys to American Eagle and said, "Change your clothes." And then she said, "I'm not going into the mall." And he said, "You don't understand." This is a quote. This is from her, which is saying that he told her, "You don't understand. There's someone sitting outside your parents' house. And if you don't go, I'm going to kill them and I'm going to kill you." So he keeps threatening her over and over and over again. And he made her repeat the events of the day, to get the story straight. And while she was talking, David seemed calm, but when she paused, he would pick up the Glock and then point it to her again and say, you know, get the story straight. So they left the Hewland Mall, and after a while, David had Carter drive to Walmart. And he said, on the way to Walmart, he told me, is what she said. On the way to Walmart, he told me I needed to get some dark sweats and some shoes that I could run in. Then he brought her to the mall to do the robbery before saying, "Yeah, you better come out alone or I'll kill everyone you love." So, of course, the prosecution is asking her, "Why didn't you just run away if you were so scared?" And Carter's excuse is that she believed that he was going to harm her family.
Right.
The store was crowded. She was seeing people everywhere that looked threatening.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going. Sorry.
No.
So even if she had gone in, the locks would have been changed and her key did not work. So when she returned to the car, she claims that David took her back to their apartment and someone pushed her down the floor as she walked in. She heard a voice that she didn't recognize saying, "I'll make her follow directions. I've already dug your grave," and then someone took off her sweatpants and raped her. After the first rape, she tried to crawl away, but before she could, she was raped again 3 more times before someone pulled her into the kitchen and told her to cover herself. She claimed that the door opened and closed a couple times, but she did not look up to see who her assailants were. The next morning, David asked her if she had a good night. Then David said, "You're going to go back and do it again." And then she said, "I heard 2 people talking who said that they haven't dropped it yet. We're going to take her back and make her do it again."
Again, this is her side of the
defense.
Defense's side.
Right.
So we're not saying this
is true or not. Yeah.
We're just saying what each side is saying.
So the prosecutors, they had more text evidence. And one text that David sent to Carter were 2 sets of coordinates that led police to this shallow hole on a ranch in Lourdes, which is it's about 35 miles away from North Abilene. And the Fort Worth police detective who investigated the case, he said that he thought the hole was actually meant to be a grave for Ashley.
I think that's the hardest thing to wrap my head around is that they didn't just want to steal from her. You know, it's easy to, you know, they followed her. They easily could have mugged her, beat her up, stolen her keys with masks on. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't, I mean, they probably still would have gotten caught, but maybe they wouldn't have gotten caught that way. But why did they find it so necessary to actually kill her? And from reading, I read that they had dug a grave miles away. Like, maybe they thought it was going to be easier to get her body out to that shallow grave that they dug. And maybe at the last minute, they decided that they were just going to set fire to the apartment. That shows some real planning. Like, they really, truly must have hated her to have to want to go to that extent. And, you know, it's easy to steal money, but I think this was about so much more than that. I think they were really just out to get revenge for being fired. And they weren't even arrested for that. They didn't have it on their record. It didn't go anywhere. So they weren't in jail. They weren't really in any sort of trouble aside from getting fired from American Eagle.
But Carter and her defense team, they said there was another narrative for this. She said that the hole that David had dug for Carter, should she refuse to cooperate. So what they were saying was that this is where I'm going to bury you if mm-hmm. you don't do what I'm telling you to
right.
do.
Which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe Carter's involved, but I always play devil's advocate.
Yeah, yeah. So remember, Carter said, David had said, I've already dug your grave.
Mm-hmm.
Whether this was all concocted in the defense room or whether this is real, you don't know. But it's interesting, you know.
Totally.
And she said, I was scared. I was too afraid to talk. David apparently said, you're so stupid. You don't even know what I was planning. I texted you a picture of where I was going to bury you. Look at your phone. And apparently there actually was not only the coordinates, but also a picture of the grave on Carter's phone.
Jesus.
But these, I mean, what I don't know is if these, it's tricky. It's not like he texted her, look at your phone, I will fucking kill you. Here's that.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, whenever I talk about something sketchy in my life, everyone's like, just call.
Yeah.
Don't email.
Yeah.
Don't leave a text.
Don't leave a texting
just call,
evidence.
Because then it's.
No, that's just call.
Just call.
Because you don't know inflection. You don't know sarcasm.
Yeah.
No, not about that. No record.
Or no record. Oh, if that's where you're going.
Yeah.
Unless somebody's bugging your phone.
But it's not. They're not. But it's the thing is that, like, there's. Unless you're on FBI, like, unless your calls are being recorded, calling's always the move. Mostly because you could be like, hey, between me and you, this.
Yeah.
This is just for harmless work shit. They're always like, hey, just call, though, because, like, then there's not, like, a track record. Your ass is
totally.
Kind of covered.
Yeah.
But anyways, the prosecutor in this case urged the jury not to buy into what Carter's defense and what Carter was saying. So they essentially believe that Carter was the not only involved, but the mastermind of the entire plot. And they stated that Carter had a lot of lies to remember, and jurors had this important but not terribly difficult decision to make in that they need to know when they're being lied to. And for, quote, for a person who is capable of beating someone to death, strangling them in their own home, lying is not a big deal.
Mm.
And I'm not letting David off the hook. But imagine the horror. Someone is probably sitting on you while someone else is taping up your hands and then your ankles. They slash your throat. And then when you're finally dead, they set your place on fire. There are a lot of people at her apartment complex, which says a lot about the defendants in this case. So he's saying, like, not only was it against her, they set it on fire. They were willing to sacrifice anyone in this building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For
it goes beyond
their
her.
Selfishness. And he said, I will prosecute David. And obviously, this was at Carter's trial. I will prosecute David, but he's not the first man to be manipulated by an older woman. Mm-hmm. And there's something to that. And I think eventually, I mean, I don't think, but eventually Carter was found guilty of her involvement. And she was sentenced to life in prison without parole in May 2016.
They had this all planned out, their planners. You know, they had this whole theft and murder for Ashley planned out for like a month. And so they knew what they were doing. There was time for, if one of them wanted out, there was time to get out. There was time to get help. And neither of them did any of that. They planned it. the original theft. Security cameras be damned. She had it all planned. She left the back door open. She stole the key from somebody else. And they had it all planned out. They knew exactly what they were doing. And that was the case, again, with the Black Friday murder. They knew what they were doing. They planned it out carefully. They obviously didn't think of everything. They didn't think about the fact that she would be found so quickly and that they would notice that her keys were stolen. And so they clearly didn't think of everything, but they still took the time to plan this all out. And that is just, to me, a mark of somebody who's manipulative and sociopathic, and they don't care about the effects they have on anyone else. I do think that they're manipulative individuals that know how to work people.
So David was also found guilty along with Carter, and he was automatically sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So he was 22 and she was 28. They are never seeing the light
of day. Their lives are ruined.
They're done.
They're done.
Like, was it worth it?
So awful. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And Ashley's family spoke to the media, and they said that our personal preference would have been that they both would be executed, but the state made the decision to not pursue the death penalty. The overall lack of a criminal history and Mallory's age at the time the crime was committed contributed to that decision, I'm sure.
So I was surprised, though, that it was a capital case where they did not seek the death penalty. So I had to kind of look into why that was. I asked some of my professors if they had experience with cases like that, because my professors had, you know, been active and worked in the forensics community and gone to trials and stuff. So I was asking them if that was something that they had ever heard of to try to grasp that concept for myself. And given the violence and the gruesomeness of this crime, I really think that they should have gone for the death penalty. I'm very back and forth on the death penalty. I learned a lot about both sides of the issue in some criminology classes that I took in college. And so I really am never definitive on it. But in this case, I just feel like they were so sure that they caught the right people, and they treated her so horribly that I just feel like they don't deserve to live. And I think this is interesting. I wanted to make sure I brought this up because I had a teacher that, even though I'm undecided, I had a teacher that said something in college that has really always stuck with me, and I think kind of applies to this. And she said that I've seen too much to be against the death penalty. And I think that's really kind of hits home in this case because, you know, if I just reading about what they did to her is just so gut-wrenching. I really couldn't believe that something like this happened to somebody that I know. It absolutely solidified my desire to work in the forensic field. Just having something like this so close, I just knew that this is where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. I wanted to help, you know, bring justice to people and their families. As somebody that works in forensic science, I just want people to know how hard it is to get away with murder of someone that you know. Every move that you make nowadays is recorded. You leave trace evidence everywhere you go. It's very difficult to really get away with something nowadays.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the most important things here is, like, we have to kind of examine this crime in a few ways, in that this is so greed driven and these guys are so young. And it's like they got away with one robbery and right. They got, like, thirsty.
Yeah. To want more. Greedy. And to want to make it so much bigger.
Yes. And then the fact that they started plotting this whole thing with their manager, Ashley, who's 31. I mean, your whole life's before you.
It's just so senseless. It sucks.
It's so sad. And if you watch, you can look at some of their trial coverage. They look like children. Like, they have no idea what they've done.
Yeah. I mean, there's a literal, like, oftentimes I say, this is somebody that, like, when I'm talking about somebody that was a victim or talking about somebody that was a perp, and I often say, like, this is somebody that could work at a, like, you'd see at the mall.
Yeah.
I often say that. And right. This is literally like people person. That you can see at the mall.
Yeah.
This is a story of just,
it's greed. It really comes down to greed.
And what did they need the money so much for?
Nothing. Their infinity is their life.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I mean, this girl, Ashley, was just beloved and suffered a horrible death. And I just can't imagine. Nothing.
No, it's just, it's one of those things where you don't obviously understand the consequences of what you're doing. And you're so like tunnel visioned in thinking that this is going to answer whatever problems that you have.
Not only that, Jack and I were talking about this. We were working earlier when we were not recording, and we're just like, we cannot believe people kill people.
It's mind blowing
for yeah. any reason.
No, that's my
even over love, even though it's
but
passion
especially
fuels,
this where it's like there's no
money?
Real connection.
No, I talk actually
your book
in my book. There's a lot in my book about this because
Chase Darkness
looked
me out now.
It's. Like, when you think about how hard it is to just wake up in the morning, right, and do all of your stuff, and then you look back at all the tests that you studied for and all the things that you saved for and all the relationships you tried to build and all of that over and over and over and over again, and then somebody can come by and just, like that,
yeah.
and take it all away.
Yeah.
That's what fucks with me the most, and that's why right. I do what I do.
Yeah. Billy's out there.
Listen, Jack and I are with Billy in that we also don't kill people and don't want people to.
This is the one tie that we have is we've never killed somebody yet. I'm just kidding.
No, this is why we do this. It's like every episode brings us one step closer. Maybe somebody who hears it is like, shit, I was considering robbing this store. I'm going to not do that now.
You hope so.
It's not
That's
worth
why
it.
I do this.
It's never fucking worth it. When has it
it's
ever
never
been
worth
fucking
it, everyone.
Worth it?
It's ever. Nothing illegal is worth it ever.
It's really yeah. not. Don't break the law.
So
it's
our
not
encouragement
good.
Is work really hard as we've we have.
Live a dignified life.
If you know of a crime, tell somebody.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, listen, life is really hard. It's even harder if you're committing crimes. Truly. Like, it just makes everything harder than your anxiety ridden, like, do they know? Will I get caught? Do you want to live like that? I'd
you
die.
Live like that. You don't commit crimes.
I live like that, and I'm an honest person. It's a burden only I should carry, though.
Don't make it worse.
Don't make it worse for yourselves.
By doing a crime. Okay, well, we're going to end it there. If you guys are connected to...
Happy Library Day.
We're not done yet.
Oh, sorry.
Well, follow us on Instagram, at Jack Manick, at Alexis Linkletter, at Billy Jensen, at The First Degree, and...
Happy Books Day.
Happy Cheese Puff Day.
What
happy
is it? Happy Cheese Ball Day.
Cheese Happy Ball. Librarian Appreciation Day.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.